by the recent tech boom in Portland. Among them, housing, rising rents, and concerns about who will be able to afford to live in Portland in the future. This is Suzanne LeGrand reporting for KBOO Community Radio.
I'm out to sing songs that will prove to you that this is your world, and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that will make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Movin' On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.
Music heard only on the left-hand edge of the dial and only on KBOO.
Every Friday, noon to 1:30.
We who believe in freedom cannot
Welcome to Water World. My name is Kristen Yount. For some time now, I've been interested in water policy. Water is something that most people take for granted, especially in the U.S., especially in the Pacific Northwest. Before moving here, I lived in three of four corners of the United States. As a child in New England, adults in my family would talk about how water in Cape Cod was drying up, that there were too many wells being drilled, and that seawater would surely inundate the dried up wells and everyone would be drinking salt water eventually. As a young woman, I lived and went to school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where it was rumored that a layer of gasoline floated on top of the aquifer that served the city. Science fiction stories when I was growing up, you know, we have Tank Girl, takes place in a dried up desert where the water company serves as overlords, money being all but worthless as people find ways to simply survive without becoming slaves to the utility companies. I've lived in Portland for almost 20 years, and thoughts of a dried up husk of a world were far from my mind for a long time. There are no Swiss cheese aquifers underfoot threatening to make Troutdale a big sinkhole, or are there? Will the aquifers in Troutdale be inundated with questionable water from the Columbia River after it filters through the sands of Hanford nuclear site? At least in Oregon, there's no need to worry about the Willamette River because that's not our drinking water. We get that from the pristine Bull Run, where water is collected from the morning dew rivulating off of clean leaves in the middle of the woods and presumably the tears of joy from happy wood nymphs. Then I started paying a water bill. Why is water so expensive here? What if people can't afford to pay their water bill? Will we have to haul water from the Willamette in buckets? But no, that's a Superfund site. Yeah, here in Portland, Oregon, the water we enjoy is from a source in the Bull Run, as long as you can pay your bill. Water bills have gone up exponentially in Portland. Many people wonder why, when we have a free source of water. Those on fixed incomes have not been able to keep up with rising taxes and rising water bills and have been forced out of their homes. The natural gentrification cycle prevails, aided by a skyrocketing utility bills situation. If you think that's confusing, let me bring your attention to Detroit, Michigan. Detroit is situated in the middle of the fifth largest freshwater resource in the world. You'd think that everyone would be able to drink, but no. Today, what would happen if the city's poor, who have enjoyed some slack in paying their bills, all of a sudden had to come correct and get current with their bills, like right now? What if every debt you have, your car, your mortgage, everything came due next month? Would you happily hand over your car keys? Would you be surprised when you couldn't get through on the phone to make payment arrangements? Would you have a leg to stand on when the tow truck comes to get your vehicle when there are three other people on your block getting their cars towed too? And that's Detroit right now. Detroiter and Detroit Water Brigade founder Mika Williams has been my primary source from on the ground in Detroit. We'll be talking to Mr. Williams live from a conference he is attending in California. It's the 2015 Center of Conflict Studies over Water and Building Bridges of Water. Mika has been invited to go to Dublin, Ireland next month, where residents are receiving their very first water bills ever. In Ireland, only those who can pay can have water that was up until now part of the commons. Detroit, Michigan has been under control of an emergency manager for years now. The city is going through the process of bankruptcy. A decision is going to be made today by one judge about the future of a huge American city. City of Detroit is 25 square miles. It's huge. So, yeah, the city is going through the process of bankruptcy. The concept of an American city going bankrupt escapes what most people think is possible in reality. Why would a state like Michigan, in this case, allow her largest city to have to cash in all the assets and submit to court proceedings? The state of Michigan has withheld millions of dollars in funds from Detroiters for years. To put it in perspective, in Oregon, the state allots certain monies to go to school systems, transportation needs, welfare, etc. To Portland is a highly populated part of the state, and that's why the state pays. There are theories that Detroit is being bought and sold piece by piece from under the feet of the people who live there now. Taxes haven't been collected in years and are being collected en masse. As I mentioned before, you have certain, you think you have time to pay something off. The tax man hasn't come for a long time, and all of a sudden, it's now, and you have to come up with all this money. So taxes that haven't been collected in years are being collected en masse. Many people have found themselves having to leave their homes because the city is taking their homes and razing them to the ground, like the next day. On the surface, it seems somewhat straightforward in a capitalist society. If you can't pay your taxes, then you don't have a right to your house. However, with the city under emergency management, it's technically running without a government. The police force and the fire department are decimated, suffering cuts to the bone. The schools are some of the worst in the country. It's completely unsafe. If there is no government, no emergency services, no infrastructure, then should people be losing their homes to be parceled off in huge corporate land grabs that are not in any way serving the people of the city at large? And then there's the water. In Detroit, thousands of people have had their water shut off for non-payment of their water bills. Thousands, tens of thousands. Arguments can be made for the Detroit water and sewer. Water has always cost something in Detroit. The DWS has been in business for 150 years. Why should anybody be surprised when the water goes away for those who can't pay? Well, for one thing, Detroit is in crisis mode. Is it fair or reasonable that people who have been skirting around their taxes and their water bills for years, robbing Peter to pay Paul, were stunned to see the hammer fall last summer when the Detroit Water and Sewerage Department hired a private company to drive around with wrenches and turn off people's water? In Detroit, 38% of people live below the poverty line. While there is no comparable precedent for giving utilities away for free, there was a plan in place to cap water fees so that they would not be more than a certain percentage of a household income. Officials decided that they would make the water department more solvent by going back on that agreement and really, really going after Detroiters for those $50, $100, and $200 water bills. Like, that's going to make a difference. The United Way released a report that mentions that two-thirds, that's 60% of Detroit residents, can't afford to cover basic needs like transport, housing, and health care. Unemployment is a staggering 15%, nearly 15%. And presumably the same caveats apply to unemployment numbers because the people counted in that figure are those people drawing benefits that eventually run out. The actual number of people out of work is much higher. Someone recently pointed out to me that minimum wage is almost $1.50 less in Michigan than in Oregon. So for those that are working, they're making over $50 less a week. That's a water bill. Detroit is full of poor people below the poverty line. Fine. The government doesn't even work anymore. Okay. In areas where the state could intervene, they won't. The infrastructure of Detroit's water is kind of awful too. Leaky pipes, a billing system that schedules people for shutoff without issuing final notices. It's almost impossible to get through to make a payment arrangement. People have to have advocates just to go down there. So why does PGE or other utilities give 5-day notices or 24-hour notices? It's not because they're nice. It's because states regulate when and why utility companies have the right to shut basic utilities off. Again, the state of Michigan could come to the aid of the poorest of her citizens. A lot of states make utility companies keep things lit and warm. Yes, with water during the winter, it is important to point out that water is necessary for steam radiators to work. So if someone in Detroit has their water turned off in the wintertime, it could be that they can't get warm either. State policies make it possible to keep people without basic utilities to have things turned on, to keep their houses lit and warm, by just making sure that people have more time to pay down their balance and get current.
20-year water tank, cause while these knuckleheads is out here sweating their guts, the sun is sitting in the treetops, burning the woods, and as the flame from the blaze get higher and higher, they say, don't drink the water, we need it for the fire. New York is drinking it, new world, and all of California is drinking it, new world, way up north and down south is drinking it, new world, used to have minerals and zinc in it, new world, now they say it got lead and stink in it, new world, fluorocarbons and monoxide. Push the water table lopside. Used to be free, now of course you will feed. Cause all tanks fill their load as they roll across the sea. Man, you gotta cook with it, baby, clean with it.
That's right.
When it's hot summertime, you fiend for it.
No.
You gotta put it in the iron you steaming
That's
with.
That's right.
It's what they dress wounds and treat diseases
Shout
with.
It out.
The rich and poor, black and white got need for
That's
it.
Right.
And everybody in the world can agree with
Let
this.
Them know.
Consumption promotes health and easiness.
That's
Go
right.
too long without it on this earth and you leaving
Shout it.
It
out.
Americans wasting it on some leisure
Say
shit.
Word.
Another nation be desperately seeking. Bacteria washing up on they beaches.
Say
and
word.
Don't drink the water so they can't wash their feet with
Say
it.
Enough.
Young babies in perpetual need these
Say
days.
Word.
Epidemics hopping up off the petri
Say
dish. Control centers try to play all secret
Say
at
word.
To avoid public panic and freakiness.
Say
there are
enough.
Places where TB is common as TB. Cause foreign based companies go and get greedy. The type of cats who pollute the whole shoreline have it purified and sell it for $1.25. Now the world is drinking that. Your mom's
water.
Wife and baby girl is drinking that. Up north and down south is drinking.
World,
it.
New world,
you just
water.
Have to go to your sink for it.
World,
the cash
world,
register's
water.
Going to chink for
world,
it.
New world,
Pearl carbons and monoxide. Got the fish looking cockeyed. Used to be free, now of course you a feed. Cause it's all about getting that cash.
Money.
Said 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 it's all about getting your cash.
Money.
Said it's all about getting that cash.
Money.
Said it's all about getting that cash.
Money.
Said it's all about getting that cash.
Money,
it's all about getting that cat.
Money,
it's all about getting that cat.
Money,
Johnny Cat.
Money,
Roseanne Cat.
Money,
give me cat.
Money,
Cole Cat.
Money,
Johnny Cat.
Money,
Roseanne Cat.
Money,
give me cat.
Money,
yeah.
Money. I can't see you, but I know that you're out.
So that was Frank Zappa. The song is called "To Make the Water Turn Black." My name's Kristen Yount. This show is a pilot program, something I want to continue doing called Water World. Talk about water policy in Portland and places where our water policy is changing all the time. And I'm going to do my best to get professionals on the show that will talk about water testing, water quality, what goes into good water policy, and how is there, and you know, going to talk about different movements to protect the commons, water as the commons, to make sure that everybody has water. Water is a human right, after all, and presumably you shouldn't be able to put a price on what is known as a human right. I'm trying to talk with Mika Williams. Mika Williams is a Detroiter. He is co-founder of the Detroit Water Brigade. The Detroit Water Brigade is a nonprofit that is bringing water to people who have had their water shut off. And it's largely in the form of bottled water. So a few cases of bottled water is what you get because of the kindness of strangers to wash your baby, to wash your feet, like that Mos Def song was talking about. You know, you got to buy a bottle of water to wash your feet in the United States. Ridiculous. Well, could be. Depending on your stance, you might think that's ridiculous. So, okay. So, Miko is at attending a conference right now, and I know that his time is very crunchy, but we did manage to get Jason Wiedes on the phone, who's also part of the Detroit Water Brigade, an activist in his own right. And I've been able to break things down in a general way about what's going on in Detroit with regard to people getting their water shut off and the bankruptcy situation. I know that there's a court case or judges ruling on the bankruptcy situation in Detroit. So I'll let you take it from there. What can you tell us, Justin?
That's right. Hey, and thanks everybody for having me on here. I'm here in Detroit right now where we're seeing the bankruptcy judge, Stephen Rhodes, has just announced a final settlement and agreement in the bankruptcy. What we're seeing essentially is that the creditors of the city, the banks and the people that lent money to the city, have come to an agreement with the debtors of the city, and the bankruptcy judge has sealed that agreement. But looking forward, we're going to have quite a few years of financial oversight over the city by the state, which was a very contentious point in the debate around this bankruptcy. It's also the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the country, and it was one of the fastest process bankruptcies, which has led a lot of people to think that it might have been rushed. There are a lot of details in here that are still emerging, but that is certainly where we stand today.
So this the way I understand it is the state of Michigan has been withholding funds from the city of Detroit, just basic operating funds that normally would go to a large city and a state. Is that correct?
Yes, that is true. The state of Michigan has been withholding funding for Detroit, but this is also a larger trend of disagreement and contention between the city of Detroit, the suburbs of Detroit, and the larger state that has gone on for many, many years, dating back decades. There's been an inability to cooperate, and much of that is racially driven. There's really still a very segregated situation here, talking about the city versus the suburbs. The city is 85-90% African-American. The suburbs, much less so. And also, you know, class-wise, in terms of prosperity, you have the city of Detroit with about 40% or 50% at or below the poverty level. And you have Oakland County, one of the surrounding suburbs, which is the third most affluent county in the country.
Wow.
And so there's just these huge gaps in the provision of basic human services. We're seeing the water getting cut off to thousands of families in Detroit, you know, at the same time that we do see economic growth in the surrounding region. So it's really a pretty contentious situation, and has been for quite a while.
Mind-blowing to I, just hearing that is mind-blowing. So you have this extremely affluent outlying bedroom towns, or, you know, people who maybe historically profited off of like Dearborn, right? Dearborn is where like Henry Ford is and was, and that's like the bedroom community for Detroit for auto workers, and people that made the money, made their family money or made their fortunes off of Detroit are just, you know, there while Detroit is just floundering and suffering. It's amazing to me, the disparity.
That's right. And also it bears mentioning that, you know, economies are built upon trust, and the erosion of trust in this region for many decades now has really come to, you know, the logical conclusion, which is that we can't have a thriving economy. And so, you know, even as there is prosperity in pockets, there's not a really thriving economy across the city and across the region, because there's just an inability to cooperate. There's longstanding feuds and disagreements between communities. You know, the water example is just one that we've seen, where for decades there's been an inability to cooperate around the water, which has historically been provided by the city of Detroit because it's placed right on the river, and the suburbs that have to get their water from Detroit. You know, this is just one example of many of how there isn't the requisite cooperation in order to have a really thriving and functioning economy. Our hope is that we can bridge that divide in the coming years, but it has to be that all the players come to the table on their own terms. We can't have a recovery that's dominated by one particular group or one particular interest, and that includes business interests. You know, there was a great quote the other day from, I believe it was Uruguayan President Mujica, the so-called world's poorest president, who said that, you know, we need to basically run people that are too concerned with money out of politics, because they need to be in business and industry, and politics is really about the happiness and the well-being of everybody. And I think that there is this over-financialization and over-corporatization of our political system, not just here in Detroit, but across the country, that's really impeding both economics and the politics right now, because we can't provide basic services to people and dignity to those who have worked their entire life and now deserve to retire with a pension.
That's right. So you said that there are all these different contingents that have to come to the table and play nice with each other. If you had to just make a quick and dirty assessment of how many interests are there, is it 5? Is it 10? Is it 20? I mean, how many people are responsible to make these decisions? Or is that completely...
It's a good question. I mean, there are so many interests at play here. But one thing that happened during this bankruptcy, which was so controversial, and maybe what, you know, sped the bankruptcy through almost in a rushed way, was the imposition of the emergency manager. This is really unprecedented in our country, to see basically the democratically elected government being sidelined and replaced temporarily, they say, but really this is going stretching into the future now with all of the conditions on the bankruptcy.
Whoa.
But being replaced by an unelected, unaccountable, appointed emergency manager by the state. I think the whole country watched as this was happening almost in disbelief that you could have this kind of thing where a governor could say, you know what, as a city, you're not keeping your finances up, you're not balancing your books, so we're going to send in basically an accountant to slash and cut and remold your city to our financial liking. And so I think that the resentment and the anger, the righteous anger at that decision is not going to subside just because the bankruptcy is over in name. People do feel that they've been cheated out of their vote. They've been cheated out of their authority and their ability to influence their lives. And so that's going to take years to mend. And along with the economics, the hopeful, you know, recovery that we haven't yet seen, but hopefully we will see here in Detroit. It's got to be, like I said, all of the interests coming to the table on their own terms, everybody coming with dignity and being respected, not just the business community, but also the local residents, community activists, nonprofits, government. All of these groups have to be able to come together and cooperate or else we're not going to have a thriving Detroit.
So you and Mika Williams have been working together to supply people with water. It's the Detroit Water Brigade. And I have also, Mika is on the line as well. And he's at a conference in California, also was invited to go to Dublin to be there and to witness what's happening in Dublin, Ireland. So I'd like to welcome Mika on. You there?
Hi, Kristen and Justin. How are you guys?
Great.
Hey, Mika.
Yes, I'm very disappointed. As I was in the middle of speaking about water rights and privatization, I get a news hit on my phone by all the news organizations saying Detroit has approved the bankruptcy. My stomach literally turned, and I just had a feeling that almost imperiled me in the middle of my speech. And what's going on, and Justin laid it out quite clear, you know, that all of this was contrived as a man-made bankruptcy. I mean, come on now, let's think about this. I'm looking at it that they said that they're going to approve the plan of adjustment. The plan of adjustment was objected to by over 600 retirees. And not only that, they also voiced their objections to different parts of the plan, to emergency manager Kevin Knorr's recognition of the plan. It's not feasible for the city of Detroit to liquidate all of its assets in order to make clean on the balance sheets. Again, Governor Rick Snyder has once again successfully dismantled part of the financial structure of Detroit to where now corporate rule is now known to be across the land. I'm just very disappointed, shocked, and now saddened that we as the citizens will never get our say into how we want our city to be recovered. That's my whole point.
Well, it sounded like, Justin, you know, I mean, it's time. There's always hope that, you know, people involved could come to the table with dignity and, you know, try to rebuild the trust that has been lost. And I think that that's an excellent point, that economies are built on trust. And when you have these backroom deals and these quickly manipulated plans of action where nobody really even knows who the major players are. I mean, it's so murky.
Nobody knows what the plans. Nobody knows what the plans have been about because half of the conversations had not been discussed with the public. They have been like the water issue has had the regional water authority has been in the back room under gag order, and no one knows what's been discussed, what's going on. And then when it's finally, you know, when they finally reached a deal, you know, the mayor of Detroit tried to present his plans, and people had questions that he evaded. You know, how do you build trust in the government when they won't even tell you what's going on? Then when you find out and ask questions and you have concerns about it, they're not being properly addressed. You know, again, it's disrespect of the citizens. This has been long going on for more than 30 years, and it's just another example that we as citizens of the city, the citizens of Detroit, We have to rely on self-sufficiency and independence. That means breaking away from the system. I'm not moving out of Detroit, and I'm not running away from Detroit. I'm also not going to give up my basic human rights and my constitutional dignity to make nice with some corporate outside interests that is trying to profit off what's left of Detroit. You know, I was just telling someone, you know, people in Detroit, they want to see better. They want to see Detroit revitalize and change, but not at this rate of structure of what they've been doing all along. And like I said, again, it's just a constant disrespect of the citizens of Detroit and Michigan because we have tried to resist some of these things that have been happening, and it just proves today that, you know, the citizens may have lost, but there is still a resistance out there that at every turn that we're going to block the plans that are happening, and we're going to fight against them because they have not consulted with the residents. I just find this to be utterly disgusting. I'm very sorry, but as I want to say in response, that, you know, if it was a chance to literally, you know, like I said, around the water issue, Judge Rhodes heard from people that had their water shut off, and he still concluded that he has no legal rights of authority. But yet you had legal rights of authority to take away people's pensions, to compromise health care, and to sell off everything in the town. You know, you have the legal authority to do that, but you don't have the legal authority to regulate over the mayor, the governor, and also the emergency manager. So it's just another constant blatant disrespect.
Right. And in my mind, the question of if there is a complete breakdown in governance, there's no emergency services. I know that lost a fire truck this past summer. Just all these things are happening, like rampant arson, really just arson, you know, the crime rate. There's just a real breakdown in services. So why are people losing their homes when they're, you know, for taxes, when they're not getting any services in return? Does that come up?
Actually, no, it did not. No, because they won't fix the services. As they say, they want to try to gain money for the services, but no one talked about where the money was going to come from and how we were going to allocate in order to get the services. You know, they say police, fire, EMS is important, but yet they were trying their best to, you know what I'm saying, dismantle the services in order to make way for privatization everywhere. You know, that's what it's basically about, the force of privatization of Detroit through corporate rule. And what do we as the citizens, why are we even paying for some of the services if we're not getting the maximum ability of the services? You know, I live in the city of Detroit all my life. So if I'm paying for, you know, the services, I expect the police to come to my house whenever I call if there's a break-in. I expect the fire department to come if I have a small fire or whatever. All of these things that are happening is just it's just unspeakable, you know, to when you look at the details and the plans that they come out with, and when you finally do figure out what is the gist of it, yeah, it's not feasible for the city of Detroit. This plan of adjustment dealt with one part, which was the demolishment of homes. Now, they demolished my grandmother's house after my mother and I have been trying to deal with the city and the county for over 3 to 4 years, and we've been getting the runaround. No one was accountable to address, you know, what is actually going on. Then they transferred my grandmother's home to the Detroit Land Bank, which is another private organization that is not accountable to anybody. So they transferred it in July of 2014, and then they demolished the house with no tags, no notice of condemnation or even demolition, or no notice saying that this house is now owned by the Detroit Land Bank, and if we want a deal, then we could come in and we can possibly strike a deal. But why do we have to go through all of that when, you know, the original process of procedure was to, you know, talk to the county to see if we can get the deed? Well, they told us at one point that it was $3,500, but we had to wait for the state for 30 days to approve whether they wanted to do something with it or not. And I looked and was like, oh, wow. That's when I knew that things were getting very serious and that we had no fighting chance. But yet let another developer comes in and he waves a wad of cash, you know what I'm saying? They'll just take his cash, but they won't take our cash.
Wow.
I just find that discrimination.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
And, Kristen, I just want to add this in, and then I actually have to jump off. And I agree with everything Miko says. But at what it comes down to at the end of the day, and this has just become more and more apparent through the bankruptcy, is that the really financial tyrants, because that's what they are,
yes,
that are really guiding the policy and driving the policy in this city, have very, very little, if any, interest in the well-being of poor people in the city of Detroit. They really have not even got on their mind those interests right now. So when you see hundreds of millions of dollars that are supposed to go to taxes, tax money that's supposed to go for schools in low-income communities, you see that rerouted to a billionaire to make a publicly financed hockey stadium downtown. That is just the epitome of disrespect and really spitting in the face of people that for all their life have just been trying to achieve the American dream as we thought it was laid out, that if you worked hard and you did the right thing, you could get a house, you could get a car, you could make a life for yourself. We see the tyrants that have been running this town into the ground. We see them over and over again spitting in the face of low-income people, of African-American people, with the decisions that they make. And in order to reverse that, it's going to take a movement of people, a peaceful, I believe, we can do it peacefully, but a peaceful, creative, proud movement of people standing up and saying, enough is enough. We're not going to let you continue to bulldoze over us, figuratively and literally, as Nico just showed you. Mm-hmm. We're going to fight back. We're going to take this city back. And this bankruptcy so-called settlement today should just be one more indication that we have a lot of work to do if we're going to build that movement. And the country should be rallying around us, too, because Detroit built this country. Detroit put this country on the road, literally. And so this is the work ahead of us, not just for the city of Detroit, but for any city, because this is the precedent that's being set today, that when your city goes underwater, when you guys fall behind on your bills, this is what's going to happen. An emergency manager is going to be imposed upon you, and the financial tyrants that have just been licking their lips for decades to try to get at these most fundamental levers of control over our society, they're going to get at them if you don't fight back. So this is the epicenter. This is ground zero right now in Detroit, and we need the support of the whole country to rally and turn the tide in the other direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just want to add one more thing. I was just asked by one of the participants in the conference, does conflict actually work in trying to get, you know, what you want? And it was surrounding a war on water. And I answered, yes, it has, because if it wasn't for the country making the profound statement that water is a human right, if it was not for America stepping in the city of Detroit and making that profound statement known, I don't think that that the water issue would have been on the national forefront, you know, as to what could happen to your city. And everywhere around the country is at risk. You know, Detroit has been one of those cities that we have absolutely, you know, tried to protect our city. The residents and the citizens have been, you know, engaged in resisting whatever that has been coming, because we know that it means destruction. We know that it means displacement and disenfranchisement. You know, we've been told since 1989 by some in the Michigan legislature that they were coming back for Detroit. We don't know when, but they're going to come back for it, and they're going to do anything they can to seize Detroit. And I think today that's exactly what they did. But I tell people all the time that resistance is only when you have to make something, you know, happen in your favor. And if we have to fight, if we have to, you know what I'm saying, go back and forth and all of that, you know, it's going to take time, but it's going to mean something, because we're trying to protect the interest of the residents and the citizens and what we want. I mean, if it happens to Detroit, it's going to happen everywhere else, to Chicago, to Los Angeles, to Atlanta. It's going to happen in Florida. It's going to happen in all of these places, and just by us, you know, being on the side of righteousness, you know, Detroit is going to be the catalyst for change. But it's only the catalyst for resisting, and it's also the catalyst for saving. You know, we're not going to let a bunch of outside corporate folks come into our city and tell us what we're doing, that we're going to have to be forced to get down or lay down. I never ran or cowered away from anything. So, you know, I think that today is going to be the day that Detroit is going to rise up. We're going to stand. We're going to fight. And if we have to do things, you know, and we need the country to support, you know, to come to help us. You know, let's think of some new strategies, solutions. Let's come up with new tactics. You know, anything that we can to save our city and other cities as well that could be facing the brink of emergency management and possible man-made bankruptcies.
Yeah, earlier when I was before you got on, I was talking about how what if tomorrow all of your bills came due, everything that you thought you had time to pay, everything that, you know, was in flux because of, for whatever reason, whether it's because you had a 20-year mortgage or because your city is being run by an accountant, an emergency city manager. What would happen if everything that you owed came due tomorrow and you had no way to negotiate on your behalf and you had nowhere to go to have somebody advocate for you on your behalf? Because that's what it would take in a situation like that. And, you know, luckily people in Detroit had people like you and Justin to help a little bit or a lot. But what if that happened to everybody? If just all of a sudden you had to just come current on everything, like you say, like you have 30 days to file something and you don't even know who to go to. It's
you,
that
you can
murky.
Expect war. You can expect war. And the reason I say war is because, you know, you have to protect what you have, what you own. You have to protect your property, and you also have to protect yourself. You know, if they were to come and say, you owe this, that, and the other, and you have 30 days, I'd be like, you know, well, good luck trying to get that. And you know, that's what it's going to have to come down to as normal, natural instinct. But I think that I'm not advocating violence or condone. What I'm advocating for is that, you know, there has to be greater support. There has to be a group or something. You know, Justin and I have been working on, you know, trying to save Detroit and also, you know, trying to fight the water situation, you know, but it's going to happen to our homes. It's going to happen to our property, and it's going to happen to our well-being. That this is genocide. First, it was economic genocide by shutting off the water and putting people in a catastrophe. Well, now the catastrophe is getting bigger and stronger, and we just have to do anything we can to fight this off, because if that's what they're doing already, then the bankruptcy was just now went through. That's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to come at you and say, oh, well, you got to pay this, and if you don't pay in 30 days, then we're going to take everything you have, your property.
Right.
I can't allow that to happen. I'm sorry. I just won't take that as an answer. We're going to do anything we can to do what we have to do in order to protect us, protect our families, and to protect what we have worked for in the city of Detroit.
So I know you're doing a lot, and you've just actually, you're in California, you're at this conference, and you're going to Dublin. So for the next, like, 3 minutes, maybe you can talk about the positive steps that are happening and what you're doing personally as one person. It's amazing the things that you do in a day, I have to tell you. And if everybody did a fraction or had a fraction of effort that you have in an hour just to go toward moving forward, just talk about what you're doing as a positive thing.
Well, the positives of me coming to this to the Center of Conflict Studies, conflict over water, and with my positive experience is that I'm shedding light to those that were watching Detroit, that were looking at Detroit through the newspapers and the media, and also that have observed Detroit for many, many years. I'm shedding light on what is really going on. What is the truth behind some of the things that is happening? And in fact, I go for my main panel is about water rights and privatization, the dangers of privatization. So I'm going to share the E-True Hollywood story of the city of Detroit. And I'm very honored to go to Dublin with Justin to talk about water rights in the city of Detroit. As we all know, that Dublin has, that Ireland actually has had their water paid through their taxes. So they pay it through their taxes. Well, now they're taking it out of their taxes and making it a separate commodity. And a lot of people have been very upset and have been marching and rallying for the past couple of weeks. And I'm very honored to participate with Justin in that conference because, you know, I come to learn and to listen and to also share some of my reasoning, you know, with the people there in Ireland. So this is going to be a very great opportunity for us to expand on the world stage, you know. at the conference, we were talking about different countries and how it's gone from water scarcity to control of water. You know, just by the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, what's going on in Gaza, also to Jordan and Syria and all these other places that are using water as a tactic of war. You know, I'm sharing the positive positive aspects that I want to share is that, you know, there is a resistance, that there is something that we're doing. You know, the Detroit Water Brigade is founded off of, you know, rapid relief and distributing water. But we also have to do more advocacy, and as well as get with other groups and organizations around the country and possibly around the world to proclaim the statement and to ensure and enforce that water is a human right and it should be held accessible and affordable across the country. And a lot of people here in California that's going through this drought and things of that nature, they are showing instant support. I've gotten so many handshakes and thank yous from so many people that are supportive of our cause, and I think there could be a possible California Water Brigade that could be formed here. Who knows? You know, I just want the country and everyone in Portland and those that are listening to understand that, you know, this could happen to you if you don't stand up and fight and form a shield, a human shield around your city, your county, or your state.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's, we're getting real close to the end. That's about all the time we have. Miko, thank you so much for talking to us. I like the idea of water policy for peace. You know, it's great. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Take care.
Ah, the water song, the electric hot tuna. It is 12 noon. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up, we have Moving On with some quality folk Americana with your host, the inimitable. And what a gal, Lori Sonnenfeld. But first, this.
If you are interested in country western music, tune in Saturday mornings from 6 to 9 a.m. for Swingin' Country on KBOO 90.7 in Portland, Oregon. That's Swingin' Country, 6 to 9 a.m. every Saturday morning.
Artichoke Music, Satori Men's Chorus, and Mark Bosnian will present Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio, Thursday, November 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland.